I'm writing to you today with one key message. You are not alone. However you may feel at this critical time of your life, you should know that there are many people who care about you and are presently giving of themselves to assist you in realizing your aspirations for the life and career you can build for yourself.
Hello, and welcome to Letters from the Lunchroom, a podcast by Communities and Schools of Mid-America. I'm your host, Victoria Partridge. Communities and Schools is a nationwide nonprofit which connects students and their families to local resources in order to remove barriers so that they will have greater success in school and in life. During this podcast, we talk to people who have a relationship with our organization. From students to staff members and alumni to volunteers, we know that people who connect with nonprofits have a story that led them there, and we want to know that story. Today, we are talking with one of our fantastic board members, Paul Carter. According to his LinkedIn profile, Paul is an executive and independent consultant with more than 30 years of experience tackling management challenges in the public, private, and nonprofit sectors. He has distinctive enterprise in social investment, social innovation, and crafting strategies that enable social purpose organizations to grow their scale and maximize their impact. He served as the initial director of the Social Innovation Fund, a priority program of the Obama administration that, under his watch, mobilized more than $500 million public and private dollars to grow promising nonprofits with evidence of impact in low-income communities. Now, all of that is incredibly impressive, and even more impressive is that it isn't even a complete list of his accomplishments. Having said that, I am truly looking forward to hearing more about Paul's story and the journey he has taken, which has led him to Communities and Schools of Mid-America. Please stay tuned as we head into the lunchroom. Hi, and welcome to the lunchroom, Paul. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, thank you. And yourself?
I'm also very well. Today has been very busy, but it's been awesome. And this is one of my favorite things that I get to do with Communities and Schools is record the podcast and talk to people. So I'm really excited to have you on. It's not just something I say. I genuinely am very excited to hear your story because you seem like a really cool person.
Well, I don't know about that, but I'm looking forward to this also, in large part because I'm so eager to engage with our community, and I'm so fascinated by the students we serve. And I actually, the only thing I regret about this is that it's going to be pretty much a one-way communication from me and us to them, and not vice versa. And I look very much forward to hearing as well as talking.
So diving into things, what was the first thing that got you connected to Communities and Schools? I don't even know when it started. When did your whole relationship with us start?
When did Communities and Schools Mid-America?
No, your relationship with us. Like, when did you first get connected with us?
Well, there are actually two answers to that, Victoria, because my initial exposure to CIS Mid-America was about four-ish years ago when I did a presentation at a local breakfast meeting for a United Way program. And I was still at the Social Innovation Fund, so I guess it was longer ago than that, so 6 or 7 years ago. And I did this program, and afterwards, I was just meeting people who had been in the audience, and very much to my surprise, I found that there was a local chapter of Communities and Schools, and I met Melissa and a couple of the other excellent employees that work with Communities and Schools. And so that was my initial exposure to Communities and Schools Mid-America. what caused me to be surprised by learning that there was a local chapter of CIS, though, was in fact that I had pre-existing experience with CIS that went all the way back to around 2000, probably 2001. And that it was a kind of an interesting story because one of the things that you actually did not touch on was that I spent 4 years in working in Boston as one of the co-founders of a management consulting firm that works with exclusively with nonprofit organizations. And early on, in 2000, we started in 2000. So 2001 was, you know, very, very early on in the life of the firm. We ended up getting contacted by a gentleman named Dan Cardinale.
I know that name.
This organization called Communities in Schools. And Dan was the new COO of this organization. And he had all sorts of ideas about how it could be, made more higher impact and all of this. And he knew we were brand new, but he didn't have any money to pay us. And we didn't have, at that point in time, we didn't have any time to take on a new client. So what ended up happening was we had, my partner and I, had a series of conversations with Dan that they were just telephone conversations, you know, every few months. And out of that, we, we forged a really good relationship with Dan. I like to think we provided some helpful advice as he was working to, you know, to get CIS on really strong footing. But we also at the time developed a very strong appreciation for what CIS was trying to do, what the concept was, why it had value to students if well executed, and that sort of thing. So looping back to my encounter with Melissa at this United Way function, that's what caused me such pleasant surprise to know that there actually was a local presence.
Wow. So you do have quite a history with us. I mean, that's like 18 years.
Actually, you know, Victoria, a little aside here. I know I'm going to get my hands wrapped because it wasn't Melissa. It was, and it wasn't Kelly. It was Brittany. Brandy. It was Brandy. But now I think Melissa or Kelly might have been there, but it was Brandy in particular. So if she listens to this, she's gonna be mad because she knows that. She knows I know it was her.
Yeah, she'll hear the beginning of the story and she'll be like, "What? That was me." But then
yeah. So should we do just the beginning again? Would that be, I can make it much more efficient.
I don't think we should, honestly. I think we should keep it totally genuine and just let all of this be part of it, to be honest with you, unless you prefer.
Okay. I'll just tell Brandy. You can tell Brandy. I knew it was Brandy.
Well, we can keep this in here so that she even hears you go, "Oh, I was wrong."
Yeah.
So we're sorry, Brandy.
Okay, great. So let's forge on.
She's incredibly, we love Brandy. She's fantastic. And unforgettable. So yeah, that's great that you got to meet her. And of course, Melissa and everybody else that was there. So yes, is there more to that story?
Well, the one other thing I guess I would say is that I had intermittent exposure to Dan over the years as they, you know, unfolded. And of course, he left CIS, two or three years ago to become chief executive officer of the independent sector, which is a very important organization that serves the entire nonprofit sector in the United States. And I do know that Dan has just reflected with such great pride over what CIS became. The other thing I'll note is that you did reference the Social Innovation Fund, that interestingly enough, during my tenure at the Social Innovation Fund, you could actually say that I was a funder of CIS, because CIS was a grantee of an organization called the Edna McConnell Clark Foundation at a very high level. And the Edna McConnell Clark Foundation was a grantee of the Social Innovation Fund. And so the some of our the money that we allocated that I was involved in worked its way to CIS. And I was very pleased to hear that. And my understanding is that it was productive for CIS.
Wow. Well, thank you, Paul, for your multiple different levels of support that you provided for us. That's really exciting. So I want to take it back a few years prior to 2001. And from what I know about you, which is very much just like surface things, you know, LinkedIn profile, what you've told me here. And you and I have met in person a couple times. We've been in a couple board meetings together, but that's talking about like board stuff. What I'm curious about is for somebody like you who has spent such a vast, like such a great part of their life in working with nonprofits, what is it that really drove you to want to do that?
I'd love to give you an answer that made sense and that listeners to this could derive some particular value out of. But the fact of the matter is, Victoria, I don't know. I think it's just a question of, you know, some people are wired one way and some people are wired another way. And for whatever reason, well, all the time that I was growing up, I just never envisioned that my own career would be in, you know, in a private sector business. Now, probably that doesn't make me an exception right there, because what I did envision was the same stuff that a lot of people do envision, like playing Major League Baseball. But of course, I realized relatively young that just wasn't in the cards. And to the extent then that I started focusing on things that were actually possible, you know, for whatever reason, my interests tended toward nonprofits and government. I was very interested in politics and policy, and I can't explain it. My father was a absolute diehard businessman, and he had a good heart, but he was a businessman. He was all about business. He had no interest in doing anything other than that. And so there's no obvious explanation. But what I would say, perhaps to hopefully make this more practically useful for people listening, is that I do think that I was in an environment. I grew up in an environment where my parents and others were really very nurturing and reinforcing in terms of the importance of people, their kids in particular, following their own passion. And they were very respectful of the idea that kids could want to do much different things, and things that differed in potentially really significant ways from what one or both parents themselves or others thought was the best answer or the obvious answer. And so so I can't explain it, but I always felt empowered to act upon it. And while it took me a while, because I did spend the first 17 years of my professional career in business, in the business world, when the opportunity presented itself, I did make the move to the nonprofit sector, nonprofit and public, and I've spent now even more time in that sector than in the business world.
Clearly, the nonprofit world is what fits right for you, at least for this moment. And I'm really glad that you talked about
the influence that your parents had on you with empowering and nurturing individuality and the individual passions that people have. Because I think it's really important for some of the kids that listen to this podcast to know that they don't have to follow in the same footsteps of their siblings or their family members if it's not what truly drives their soul and their you know, their happiness. Because in a previous podcast, and forgive me, I cannot remember which podcast it was at this point, which episode, but we talked about that and how whenever you follow your true unique identity and the passions that you want, that that's where you actually find not only happiness, but also success.
See, I think that's absolutely right. And of course, that's not to say that, you know, that you can't be successful in things that you don't have like a super passion around. And fortunately, that's good news for a lot of people, because my own experience is that there are a lot of people who, you know, for a variety of reasons have selected careers or whatever that in the end they're just not that jazzed about. So I would absolutely endorse what you were just saying, Victoria. I think it's really critical that everyone identify their own passions, and that you at least explore very seriously what opportunities following your passions actually can present for you in terms of building a life and a career and that sort of thing, because you only have one life to live. And so following a passion, that can sound like a cliche, but I want to think of it as a really profound phenomenon, because the passions that we're talking about, that's a set of interests that, you know, that I'll speak directly to the listener, that, you know, that you can have, that is yours. And you are, because of that, you are going to bring energy to it. You're going to bring a desire to spend time to it. You're going to bring a curiosity to it that you simply are not going to have about things you don't really care about. And so to the extent that you can take advantage of that in ways that help you define pieces of your life that are really significant, it's all good. It's just all good. And it means not only your potential, I think, for happiness and satisfaction, but your potential for a true profound contribution just become that much greater.
Yeah, I kind of wish you could see me right now, Paul, because I'm just over here just like nodding my head, agreeing with you. Because you're so right. And the only other thing that I would add on there is that the value of doing something that truly fuels your passion is so much greater than the value of the monetary, you know, results that you get from it. Of course, we all want to make enough money to, you know, pay our bills and have some savings and maybe have a little fun. But man, if you can do that and you get paid to do something that you're truly into, that's like the best thing you can have. Because like you said, you only have one life to live. You might as well enjoy what you're doing with it.
See, I would absolutely agree with that, Victoria. And if I could, I'll go just a little deeper on it, because, you know, I understand that like you're saying, money matters. Okay. One of the things that you didn't mention that appropriately is that I went to business school. So I also went to law school, but that didn't work out because I just didn't like it. So I dropped out of law school as I was trying to find my own passion, if you will, my own niche. So I went to business school, and I went to a really good, very prestigious business school, the Stanford Business School. And the fact of the matter is that a place like that makes certain opportunities available to people that just are not kind of normally available. And so my classmates include a lot of people who have made a ton of money. It includes people who've been very successful in other pursuits as well, but a lot of people have made a lot of money. And so this question that you were just alluding to is one that I've got a lot of experience in pondering directly, which is, what role should making money play in the life you create for yourself or the choices that you make? And now I'll acknowledge that I've had a career that has enabled me to make good money. But I've also explicitly made choices that I knew were going to significantly reduce the potential for me to make levels of money that a lot of people aspire to. And one of the very specific illustrations of that I'll offer is that I'm speaking to you now from the second floor. It's my home office, the second floor spare bedroom in my house in Old West Lawrence. And so I live now, and I have for the last 15 years, in the town I was born in. And I made explicit choices around that. And my point of mentioning this is not to congratulate myself on making certain choices. It's to emphasize to anybody listening who's, you know, struggling with trying to determine what your passion is and what kind of life you really want to live for yourself. Going back, Victoria, specifically to the question that you raised about what role money should play in this. And I would just say, again, bottom line, that, you know, money matters, but it's up to each of us individually to determine how it matters and to what extent it matters relative to other things that, you know, that become part of your life. So whereas I spent several years working in downtown San Francisco, and I've spent several years working in downtown Boston, and I've worked in downtown New York City and some other places, that right now, again, I'm speaking to you from downtown Lawrence, Kansas, where my wife and I chose to live. And my professional life takes me literally all around the world, but I do it from here, and I do it from here for a reason. I have three brothers who live within five blocks of me. I have two other siblings who live in Lawrence. And again, I'm not trying to congratulate myself or suggest in any way that these are the kinds of choices that somebody else should make. But I will say that for me, they represent very explicit choices with known consequences for the types of things that I, on one hand, would be able to do by living in Lawrence, but on the other hand, that I would have to, you know, give up not living in Lawrence. So life is full of trade-offs, and the best thing you can ask is that you make the right ones. But making the right ones means thinking really deeply about what matters to you and what in the end you will wish your life was all about. So this has suddenly gotten seemingly very profound, but I deeply believe that, and would, you know, I think everybody needs to think through what kind of life they really want to live, and then feel very proactive about making that happen.
Well, and I think that one thing that you said that was an incredible point to bring up is that whenever you tried out law school and you decided that you said it didn't work out for you, that it's okay as you are figuring out what you want to do to try something, see if it fits. And if it doesn't fit, it's okay to stop it. And it's not like you failed. You just, that didn't work out. And it's totally normal. It's a completely acceptable part of life. And it honestly helps us grow and learn more about ourselves and what it is that we want to do that will lead us to that true passion that we're looking for.
See, that is absolutely right, Victoria. And let me pick up on this fear of failure thing, because, you know, that was actually a very explicit, known consideration in my case. Now, it would be for anybody, okay, it, potentially. So I went to KU and I did really well and I was very ambitious. I wanted to do big things and, you know, live interesting places and all of that. So law school seemed to me to be a pretty good place to go. And I went to a pretty well regarded law school. And interestingly enough, my father had also gone to, he was born and raised in a little town in Kansas and went to a big time law school. And he did not do well, not by his own choice. He did not do well academically, and he needed to transfer. This is right after World War II and a whole bunch of different stuff. But bottom line, there can be an absolute perception of failure around, again, I'll speak to the listener, around you. I mean, because decisions that you make that you may think you may be 100% confident are the right decisions for you may very well be perceived by others as being the wrong decision. And one of the things that you just need to be comfortable with, it's really critical to get good advice from people and input and all of that and recommendations and that sort of thing. But in the end, you have to make your own decisions about your life. And that means doing some things that everybody says are amazing, but it can also mean doing things that people really question. And so my father had, he had left law school. And so there was in the family growing up, there was just this whole sense of my grandparents, et cetera, you know, that he could have been a big lawyer, blah, 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 blah. Well, so then I go to law school and I'm sitting with my friends talking about law school. And I'm thinking, like, this is working for them. It's not working for me. I just don't think I want to be a lawyer and do two more years of this. Like, what is that about when I could be doing other stuff? So I chose to leave law school, but it was absolutely on my mind. What will, you know, the family, what will my parents, you know, what will my grandparents, blah, 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 aunts and uncles, whatever. What will they think? Because, like, I'm doing it too. Well, you know what? As long as you know it's the right decision, you got to do it. A little addendum to that, too, is that, you know, most decisions aren't once and for all time. You can fix. You know, had that been the wrong decision, had I gotten dropped out of law school and I go, oh, man, you know, really, I should be a lawyer. I could go back to law school. You can fix mistakes. You know, or you can fix changes in your, you know, in your judgment. It's, you know, these things aren't for all time.
So true. And I know you and I just keep bouncing off each other. And this first part of the podcast episode is getting long, but you were so true. Like, after I graduated from graduate school, I thought about going on to law school myself. And some of my you know, fellow students did go on to law school. And I instead went into starting my career with nonprofits. And as I saw my friends getting into these jobs and making a lot more money than I was, I kind of thought, oh my gosh, did I make the wrong decision? And in my heart, I was like, no, this isn't the wrong decision. But it was still it kind of stung a little bit because I felt like I wasn't as successful. But the truth is that success is not measured on the amount of money that you make. And now I'm sitting here. I've been with Communities and Schools for 5 years. It is absolutely the most wonderful organization that I've ever worked for. And on July 1st, I get to take on my dream job with this amazing organization where I'm doing something that just fulfills me every single day. And I'm so glad that that's the decision that I made and that I didn't go to law school because that wasn't the right path for me. This is the right path for me.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'll just like one last closing comment on that because, and which I mentioned actually, Victoria, in the spirit of, see, I'm 65 years old. I mean, so I've seen a lot of this. I've been down a lot of paths and all that. And so the last thing I would say to that is that that ultimately each of us have to be the ultimate judge of the nature of the life we've lived and whether it's been, you know, satisfactory or not. Now that obviously we're not the only judges, but we're the ultimate judge. And so I just see a lot of people who I do think for one reason or another are feeling trapped, and they're feeling that they can't do that. They can't make the kinds of decisions that we're talking about here for whatever reason. Either they make too much money and they can't not, or they live in a certain place and they can't leave, or, you know, whatever it is. Sometimes those considerations are real, in which case you just have to accept them. But in some cases, they aren't that significant if you're willing to make certain trade-offs that in the end really could offer significant, maybe even profound, other advantages. So just take control of your own lives. That's all I would say in the end.
That's solid advice. Okay, so with that, we'll wrap up the first part of this episode, and we will be back with a second serving of Letters from the Lunchroom after this break. So stay tuned. Welcome back. As part of our show, we ask each guest to write a letter to the students that Communities and Schools serves. The only guideline they are given is that it must come from the heart. Without further ado, here is Paul Carter reading his letter to CIS students everywhere.
Dear students, I'm writing to you today with one key message. You are not alone. However you may feel at this critical time of your life, you should know that there are many people who care about you and are presently giving of themselves to assist you in realizing your aspirations for the life and career you can build for yourself. Of course, this group includes parents and teachers. Please be aware that it also includes the people and organizations represented by Communities and Schools of Mid-America. Our service partners, our funders, our team, and our board, of which I am a part. Everything we do is ultimately intended to help you. That said, this has to be a two-way relationship because the fact is that we won't always know what kind of help you need. So the challenge for you will be twofold. One part is to take as much advantage as possible of what CIS makes available to you in terms of services and resources and people and opportunities. The other is to be as candid as you can be about letting us know what is working for you and what is not and why. It is a privilege to be working with you, and we could not be more optimistic about your future. All the best. Paul.
So, Paul, now that you've had a chance to read your letter aloud, how did it make you feel?
It makes me feel good, Victoria, but it makes me feel good in exactly the same way that my other engagement with CIS makes me feel. Which also is connected, going back to the earlier part of our conversation, you know, with what I wanted to feel that drove me to dedicate my life to doing things like this. I think it's, you know, it's really, really special to have the opportunity to utilize skills and experiences that I have, or for you to do so with the skills and experiences you have or others around us in ways that that have the potential to make really significant contributions to other people. And so this becomes just, you know, a very specific example of exactly that phenomenon.
Another question that I like to ask the guests of this podcast after they have read their letter out loud is, whenever you sat down to write the letter or to type it up, did you find it difficult to determine sort of what direction you're going to take with it?
In this particular instance, no. But I can appreciate where your question comes from, because writing a letter of this sort, I mean, there are just so many different directions you can go. But this message occurred to me. It sounded worthy. The words came to me. So I just sat down and wrote it out. And for once, I didn't worry too much about the paths not taken. But I do appreciate totally where your question comes from, because there are just so many different things that, you know, that matter as any of us think about the students that CIS is trying to serve that we have the privilege of contributing to.
Mm-hmm. And so this particular letter is full of advice and, you know, words of optimism for the students that we serve. If you were to go back and meet your younger self that is, you know, in school, is there some advice that you would give that person?
It's a little challenging to do so without more context, because, you know, there's just so much, you know, so much as I put myself, as I do exactly what you're saying and try to put myself in that position. The first thing that occurs to me is like how much I didn't know. But what I didn't know just ran the gamut in terms of topics and issues. I mean, what I didn't know about, you know, about having a career, what I didn't know about, you know, the history of the society I was living in, what I didn't know about how to, you know, do this, that, or the other thing. I mean, there are just so many things you don't know. So it makes giving advice pretty challenging. So take a pass at this question unless you want to either narrow it. Except I will reference everything we talked about in the first part of the conversation, which I suppose you could say embodies a lot of, you know, stuff that I wish that I had known when I was much younger.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that's actually really fair to respond that way, because it actually brings up a point that we've kind of talked about, but not specifically. And that is the beauty of living life's experiences and the knowledge that you get from those experiences. And so if you were to have the opportunity to go back and speak with your younger self, you might actually take away from some of those really wonderful experiences that you went through, just going through life as you do and trying and failing and trying again and finding something that you love.
I think you're right. And let me pick up exactly on that. I guess, you know, in this context, consistent with what we've talked about, I think there is inherent value to experiencing new things, you know, whether that's trying activities, you know, trying sports. Yeah, I love soccer, but you know what? What is that basketball all about? Or whether it's getting to know different people. You know, yes, I've got my friends, but these other folks that I don't really know well, you know, I don't have to reject my friends to get to know more about them. I can just like make more friends. Or whether it's traveling and learning more about places and other people and other cultures and, you know, all of that. I just think there's inherent value to young people learning and exploring. And I would differentiate that from judgment about what kind of life you ultimately want to live. Like I've known a lot of people who have spent their whole career in a particular job, which I never did. I've probably had half a dozen different careers. But I've known a lot of people who chose a job or career and they did it and they're still doing it and they may have retired from it. Or I know people who lived in the same house all their lives. So this is not to say that somehow or another that the life that they chose was not a worthy life or whatever. But I do think that I'll distinguish between the desire to learn and understand as much as possible about your world and yourself. I'll distinguish that from the specific decisions that you make as a result of that. So here I am living in my hometown. You know, as I put in a Christmas letter a few years ago, is that on my normal run, I'm a jogger. So my normal run takes me past the hospital I was born in and my nursery school where I went, you know, when I was 4 years old or whatever. So, you know, you could look at this, somebody could look at this and go like, God, man, he lives, you know, whatever. But I'll distinguish again between the decisions you make about what life you want to lead versus the curiosity and, you know, and energy that you dedicate to learning about what your choices are and what you do like and what you might do well and what the world's all about. Because I do think there's inherent value to that, no matter where it ultimately leads you.
So something else that you brought up, and I'm just tickled, number one, by the way that this episode is going, because I don't think I've ever had like this back and forth quite like this, where we've given so much advice and the stories have just, you know, kind of just ping-ponged off each other. But whenever you were talking about, you know, running by your hospital that you were born in and the nursery school that you went to, it kind of reminded me of a piece of advice that I think is really important for just generally everybody. And that's not to judge people by the surface of what you see and to get to know them more deeply. Because like you were saying, if someone was to see you and they see, oh, you know, he's living in the same town that, you know, he grew up in and he's, you know, within five blocks of his siblings and in the same city as the rest of his siblings, they would never know that you just came back from where?
South Africa.
And then you're on your way here in a little bit to somewhere else?
Singapore.
To Singapore. Like those are, that's an entirely different thing that if people were just to judge you at the surface. And I think that that's important to know, is that we should never judge people on the surface, that, you know, we're all unique human beings with so much more to us than what you just see on the outside or at first glance. And so I think that's really good, especially as we work with our kiddos who themselves are learning sometimes for the first time, then they're more than just what meets the eye, that they themselves are more than what other people perceive of them.
Exactly. And just building on that too, Victoria, I mean, I think so in terms of like, I found it very focusing to, when I'm facing big decisions, sometimes to project in the future and then look back from there. So like now I'm old enough, I don't have to do that too much. I'm actually at that point. But as you're younger, I found it really helpful sometimes to say, now, like, what if I were, you know, if I were actually 40 or 50 or whatever, and then I was looking back on this, what do I think I would wish that I had done? And so in that context, a type of regret that I wanted to make sure I never had was not knowing something or not trying something. Okay, so just, again, building exactly on what we were doing. It's one thing to say, you know, I'm in a certain job, and I understand, you know, let's say I'm in that job, but then you say, like, and maybe I never ever considered doing something else or challenged myself to do something else or back to passions. You know, there was that thing that I was interested in that I really thought I could do well, that I really loved to do. I never tried it. I never gave it a shot. I mean, those are the kinds of regrets I never wanted to have, as opposed to, you know, I did try it, it didn't work out. Well, okay, you know, not everything works, but at least you tried it.
With that great advice, we are going to take another quick break, and then we will be back with some extra credit. All right, Paul, we like to wrap up each episode with the opportunity to earn some extra credit. Are you ready to answer a few more questions before we let you go?
I am.
Okay, question number one. If you had one superpower, what would it be and why?
Oh, man. Oh, gosh. That's a very challenging question, because there are so many I'd wish I had. I know some of them are really much better than others, but what would it be? I think it would be to I've got two competing options. Okay. So one is to be able to transport myself anywhere, like super quick. Like if you're being beamed up somewhere in Star Trek, like to snap the fingers and go to Johannesburg, South Africa, or Singapore without experiencing 24 hours of travel. Okay, that's one thing. But the other thing that occurred to me, which I think might be even better, would be to be able to read super fast. So like if you could read a book, a big, huge book, in half an hour or something like that and retain it. That would be amazing.
That's a new one. No one's ever said that one before. So your second extra credit question is, what is one place, and actually this is going to be really interesting because of what you just said. So what is one place or time that you wish you could visit and why?
Well, the place, I'm actually somewhat prepared to talk about that, because I think, you know, reasonable amount about places that I've never been. And one of the places that I would most like to go to that I've never been to is Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Now, I say that having, you know, been a lot of places, but what makes that so fascinating to me is that it seems to be this city that has this amazing combination of physical beauty, history, cultural diversity, diversity in terms of people and their problems and the challenges that they're confronting. So enough said. So that's kind of in the context of our planet and our time, that's what comes to my mind. What literally comes to mind, and I've thought from time to time, you know, on the beach or whatever, about like, gee, if I could go time travel or whatever. And honestly, where I would want time travel to go, to take me if I could do it, is to meet my own relatives, my own ancestors. I mean, I'd like to know, like, why, what motivated my great-grandfather to leave Germany, you know, and what was the, like, the texture of the trade-offs that he made. Because I actually, I had an interesting conversation one time when I was in visiting Germany, meeting with a relative. My mother was actually born in Germany, but she, her grandmother had gone back. So it was kind of coincidental that she was born there. But anyway, so talking to a German relative, they actually told me, this person told me that with respect to this previous ancestor, that the way word had gone down in the family that stayed in Germany was that the people who left for the U.S. really were never that happy. It was a stunning thing to me to be talking to a German relative who said what they'd heard, the family lore was, you know, that so-and-so Heinrich or whatever, who left Germany to go to the U.S. was never that happy. And it just was, on one hand, it was kind of poignant. On the other hand, it was sort of laughable because I just didn't believe it. I didn't believe it. I just thought it was the Germans just, you know, just making up their own stories. But that's what I would do. I would want to meet my, you know, my ancestors who made critical decisions like that and understand more about it. Talk to my dad, who's been no longer with us for 30 years, and find out, like, why did you drop out of law school? Like, what were you experiencing?
Very cool. All right, your final extra credit question is, what is the number one reason that you feel people should get involved with communities and schools?
Which people are we talking about? Are we talking about... or maybe, you know, students or funders or, you know, staff people or board members.
Let's do adults, so non-students, but the rest of them we can kind of group them up perhaps.
Okay, I think the number one reason is that it's an extraordinary vehicle that can allow you the opportunity to do, on one hand, to make contributions that you as an adult are distinctively able to make in the context of providing value to individuals who uniquely have a need for that contribution. And so I think just in general, anybody listening to this can appreciate, given everything else we've talked about, that's about as good as it gets.
I agree. All right, Paul, that is it. Then we are going to wrap up today's episode. I want to thank you so much for joining us, and I want to wish you safe travels as you are about to take another trip. For more information on Communities and Schools of Mid-America, including a full listing of our current board members, please check out our website at cismidamerica.org. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast and follow us on social media at cismidamerica. I hope you've all enjoyed this episode of Letters from the Lunchroom. I know I did. I'm your host, Victoria Partridge, and until next time, class is dismissed.